Chapter 7, The Assyrians and Their Records. We must now retrace our steps somewhat in order to study the rise of another great people and their mighty empire, namely the Assyrians, one of the most remarkable of the ancient powers of Bible times, who have left records which are most valuable in confirming the authenticity of the scripture histories. One striking point about the Assyrian records is that their kings, who were contemporary with many of the kings of Israel and Judah, caused the history of their times to be written in the cuneiform characters upon baked clay prisms or stone tablets, which have been brought to light to furnish us with their own accounts of the times in which they lived. Thus, we have handed down to us the authentic official records of Shalmaneser III, Tiglath-Pileser III, Sargon, Sennacherib, Esarhaddon, and Ashurbanipal, all of whom are referred to in the Bible. Year after year, each of these monarchs records in much detail the various campaigns undertaken by him and the successes gained on all hands. What an opportunity, then, do these accounts afford for comparison with the biblical records, and we shall see as we proceed what abundant confirmation they give of the accuracy of the latter. Another feature which characterizes the Assyrian official histories or annals is their method of distinguishing the several years of their reigns by the name of the chief magistrate of any particular year, in the same way as the Romans did in later days. It is thus possible very reliably to date the reigns of the Assyrian kings and the years in which particular events recorded by them took place. Lists of these eponyms, that is, those whose names were given to the different years, have been found during excavations of the ruins of the Assyrian cities, and many of these are now in the British Museum. The Assyrians, as did also the early Babylonians, paid great attention to astronomy, and in one of their eponym lists, it is recorded that during the year that one named Per-Sagalai was the eponym, an eclipse of the sun took place in the month of Sivan, between our May and June. Hence, it has been possible to fix the date of this particular year as 763 BC on June 15th, of which it is proved by astronomical calculations that an eclipse of the sun took place, which would have been visible at Nineveh. The corresponding dates of the other eponym years on the lists can be obtained by working backwards and forwards from this date. And in this way, it is possible very accurately to date the principal events recorded by the Assyrians from the accession of Adad-nirari II in 911 BC to that of Ashurbanipal in 668 BC. This, as will be seen, well covers the period of the synchronous histories of Israel and Assyria, and affords a means of confirming the accuracy of the one against the other. Now let us turn to the scripture account of the rise of Assyria, and see how this accords with the archaeological facts. In the 10th chapter of Genesis, as has already been observed, the rise of the early Babylonian kingdom is recorded. Speaking of Nimrod, the son of Cush, it is said, The beginning of his kingdom was Babel and Erech and Akkad and Calne in the land of Shinar, verse 10. This statement and its wonderful agreement with the archaeology of Mesopotamia has already been dealt with in connection with the Babylonians. The scripture then goes on to say that out of that land went forth Asshur and builded Nineveh, and the city Rehoboth and Calah, and reason between Nineveh and Calah, the same is a great city, verses 11 and 12. Now this statement will be found to be borne out by the results of archaeology on the ancient Assyrian sites, as much as is that of the Babylonians. First of all, there is the name of the founder of this people, which is Asshur. This, as is well known, is the name of the national god of the Assyrians, and formed a part of the name of several of their kings, such as Ashur-Nassirpol, Ashur-Den, Ashur-Banipal, and many others. Then, of the four cities referred to, namely Nineveh, Rehoboth, Calah, and Resen, the first has been discovered on the east bank of the Tigris opposite the modern Mosul. The ruins of Calah have been identified with the mound at Nimrud, 20 miles further south on the same river, and between these two are the ruins of Resen. Calah, or Nimrud, is stated in an inscription by Ashur-Nassirpol to have been founded by Shalmaneser I about 1280 BC, but later, under Sennacherib and his successors, the capital was at Nineveh. At Calah, the ruins of three palaces have been discovered, namely those of Ashur-Nassirpol, Shalmaneser III, and Esarhaddon, while at Nineveh are the remains of the palaces of Sennacherib, Esarhaddon, and Ashurbanipal. Still further south along the river Tigris are the ruins of the first capital, the city of Asshur itself. The position of Rehoboth is not so definite, but if we take the marginal reading of the above quoted text, which is, "Out of that land went forth Asshur and builded Nineveh and the streets of the city and Calah," we shall see that it is not another city that is intended, but the streets of the city of Nineveh. On this last mentioned city, we have some details in the book of Jonah. Here it is called that great city, chapter 1, verse 2, and 3, verse 2, and an exceeding great city of 3 days' journey, chapter 3, verse 3. And again, that great city wherein are more than 60,000 persons that cannot discern between their right hand and their left, and also much cattle, chapter 4, verse 11. That it was indeed a great city is evidenced by the ruins of the ancient walls, which enclose an area of 15,000 by 7,000 feet. But this would only be the main part of the city, which was doubtless surrounded by suburbs, so as to attain the great size indicated in the above quotations. Its connection with the prophet Jonah is celebrated by a mound at one side of the ancient site, which is still called by the Arabs Nabi Yunus or Prophet Jonah, and tradition has it that the prophet was buried under the mosque erected on that spot. The city is again referred to in the prophecies of Nahum, who foretold its terrible overthrow. The streets and broad ways, the wall, the river, and the palace are all there set out, and a general description of the great city is given, which is accurately borne out by the results of excavation. The chariots shall rage in the streets. They shall jostle one against another in the broad ways. They shall seem like torches. They shall run like the lightnings. He shall recount his worthies. They shall stumble in their walk, and they shall make haste to the wall thereof, and the defense shall be prepared. The gates of the river shall be opened, and the palace shall be dissolved. Nahum 2, verses 4 through 6. The glory and grandeur of the royal palace is also indicated by the words, "Take ye the spoil of silver, take the spoil of gold, for there is none end of the store and glory out of all the pleasant furniture." Chapter 2, verse 9. But, as already noticed, the scriptures tell us that these cities, which were the foundation of the Assyrian Empire, were founded by one named Asher, who went out of the land of Shinar and was a descendant of Shem, Genesis 10, verse 22. All this is corroborated beyond doubt by the records, both of the Babylonians, who dwelt in the land of Shinar, and of the Assyrians. From the language and writings of the latter people, if from nothing else, it is evident that they were Semitic, or descendants of Shem, and also Babylonian in origin. The Assyrians used the same method of writing as the Babylonians, namely that of inscribing their peculiar wedge-shaped characters upon clay tablets or cylinders and prisms. And from a study of their languages, it is evident that the one proceeded from the other. The rise of the Assyrian kingdom after that of the Babylonians is also confirmed by the records which each has left. Now let us consider the rise of this great people and how they were used by the God of all nations as an instrument in his hands for the punishment of other nations for their wicked ways, and particularly of his chosen people Israel, who were his chief concern among the peoples of the earth. A remarkable providence it is to observe how this mighty nation Assyria was raised up at that particular time when God would pour out his judgments upon the surrounding nations and was made in his hands the rod of his anger and the staff of his indignation. Isaiah 10, verses 5 and 15. Not that Assyria was less wicked than the nations against whom she was sent, but she was merely the instrument prepared and used in the divine purposes for the intended end, so that after the work was accomplished, we see the judgments of God falling upon Assyria herself in the removal of her greatness and the utter overthrow of Nineveh. A wonderful example this is, as was also that of the Chaldeans under Nebuchadnezzar afterwards, of the overruling providence of God, whereby he has been pleased to make use of the lust of a fierce and mighty nation to bring about his righteous purposes. Their design has been only to increase their empire and possessions by attacking other nations, and in so doing, they were most wicked and guilty. And yet, all the while they were being used of God to execute his righteous judgments. I will send him against a hypocritical nation, and against the people of my wrath will I give him a charge, to take the spoil and to take the prey, and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. Howbeit he meaneth not so, neither doth his heart think so, but it is in his heart to destroy and cut off nations, not a few. But after this work is done, the wickedness of the attacking nation will likewise be punished. Wherefore it shall come to pass that when the Lord hath performed his whole work upon Mount Zion and on Jerusalem, I will punish the fruit of the stout heart of the king of Assyria and the glory of his high looks. Isaiah 10, verses 6, 7, and 12. The scriptures clearly set out the intentions of the Assyrian monarchs in such words as the following: And my hand hath found as a nest the riches of the people, and as one gathereth eggs that are left, have I gathered all the earth. And there was none that moved the wing, or opened the mouth, or peeped. Isaiah 10, verse 14. Also the numerous lands which they attacked and overran, besides Israel, are stated in the following passages. Where are the gods of Hamath and of Arpad? Where are the gods of Sepharvaim, Hena, and Iva? Have they delivered Samaria out of my hand? 2 Kings 18, verse 34. Have the gods of the nations delivered them which my fathers have destroyed, as Gozan and Haran, and Rezeph and the children of Eden, which were in Thelezer? 2 Kings 19, verse 12. As we proceed, we shall show that the records of the Assyrians themselves, describing their conquests and their intentions in pursuing them, confirm in a remarkable manner the above quotations of Scripture. But we must reserve this for succeeding chapters.